110 or, I mean, 210 or 220, we can, Steve, why don't you continue just walking us through,
okay.
House Bill, I mean, section 210 is, dissolution of a business, I suppose, anything that remains left over and is unclaimed.
Section 220 is, would require anyone that is acting as fiduciary or agent for another person, and that other person has apparently left property with the agent or fiduciary, that property is to be turned over after a holding period of 5 years. Section B, line 20, discusses IRAs in particular. Banks act as, and other financial institutions act as agents under the federal IRA system. The rules are somewhat different for IRAs. I think David Epstein went over that with you the first time he was here.
Yeah. In other words, IRAs don't count for all practical purposes.
Not unless we get to the point in time where a mandatory distribution would have had to be made based on the owner's age.
What happens if an institution holding an IRA goes under? They don't distribute the IRA back to the person, or they give it to another institution to hold until the person reaches retirement age?
Yeah, certainly a good question.
I'm
assuming that someone is going to step in as trustee for the ailing financial institution and keep the affairs going.
Okay, let's keep on moving then. About C, agent for the business association.
Just another little minor nuance to it. Kind of a common sense provision.
And 230. Let's send it for the record, Mr. Pettijohn is now here. We'll go up to 9 o'clock, and unfortunately we have to vacate for the ethics committee meeting that will be held in this chamber.
Okay, Section 230 deals only with intangible property held by courts and public agencies. We're basically talking about money. The court, the state, other governmental subdivisions oftentimes will come into possession of intangible asset. This is given only a 1 year holding period.
Marijuana held.
This includes the University of Alaska and Alaska Railroad and thousands. Are we covering them all?
Covers them all. And we had quite a debate on gift certificates and credit memos last Saturday. To me, this is not a controversial issue right here. I think some smoke screen was developed last Saturday that said, hey, you know, all of a sudden tremendous bookkeeping pressures are going to be put on small businesses. I think they are already keeping track of this type of information based on certificate numbers. They're not required to keep name and address, but certainly they do keep for their own records track of how much money they have outstanding in the form of credit memos or gift certificates. And after a certain time, 5 years here, it does become unclaimed property.
Okay.
Any questions on that?
Yeah, I would like to, Mr. Chairman, go back look at Section 230 for a minute. Public corporation, would that include something like Alaska Legal Services?
Public corporation would include Azure.
Or public authority, I think. that's what, eight is a public authority, railroad's a public authority.
Thank you, that's my.
I think a utility like Ketchikan Public Utility, which is owned by the city, that's a public corporation.
But that's the utilities are in a different section.
What?
Remember that, remember we had the thing on utility for bonds, just like, that's. Anyway, that's, thank you, that's actually.
That's public authority, any dams or anything like that, or that.
You're gonna have some abandoned ones here, Reese.
Incidentally, we ought to be making notes, and I haven't been, I'm sorry to say, of things we wanna ask Epstein if we're calling again, which I want to do when we kinda finished in our presence. I think I am gonna ask him about the gift certificate. I agree with you, I don't see why it's such a big deal. But, you know, he can tell us whether this is a common provision in all of the states or whether it's just a rare one.
If you would like me to contact David and set up a time.
Yeah, well.
Let me know.
Okay, I will, well, I don't know what the time will be yet, but I think as soon as we finish this go-through, we'll talk about what we wanna talk to him about, and we'll set up a teleconference with him. Okay, let's keep on going now.
$250 is wages. Pure and simply, 1 year after the wage is paid and unclaimed, if the check's returned, or the employee doesn't come in to pick up his final paycheck, the money is turned over to the state. There's such a short holding period because of the transit nature of employees who leave paychecks behind. The trail grows cold very quickly, and the state has better access or better ability to find the wage earner than the employee would.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I have not been to all the sessions on this bill, but is it clear that this provision does not conflict with any existing law on the payment of wages? I mean, there's a pretty extensive body of statutory law on payment of wages.
Has
that been reviewed?
I'm familiar with much of the Department of Labor's law dealing with the subject, and I don't see any conflict at all.
Oh, seems to me to be very complimentary to it, because the aim is to really get the unclaimed wage check to the worker.
How long does the worker have to come to the state to claim this?
Forever.
Yeah.
Right. So I think he's better protected this way than he is the other way.
Why is it?
I remember I was up there and
all his property goes to the state.
Yeah. All the personal property.
All the personal property goes to the state, and then the state's liable to pay it out to this guy whenever he shows up forever. The company could go under after 3 years. If you want wages, this is the best protection it can be.
I apologize again if this has been asked, but what about the situation of a bankruptcy? Wages are a priority claim in a bankruptcy. What happens if a bankruptcy occurs more than a year after the after it's presumed abandoned and the company goes into bankruptcy? Does there remain then a wage claim against that company? A priority wage claim?
It's not against that company. See, they turn the money over to the state.
So the person doesn't have a wage claim.
You work for me, you leave, and I can't get a hold of you. Finally, after 1 year, I send Don Fox's paycheck to the state, or the equivalent thereof, and the state has it. Then if you come back 7 years later, you can say, hey, state, I can only incorporate when bankrupted, but I want my money.
You're saying there's a bankruptcy law then?
No, because the wages are paid.
No. The company is out of
considered wages paid.
Well, what happens, Mr. Fox, what happens if the company goes bankrupt 6 months after the wages became due? And monies that represent those unpaid wages are part of the bankruptcy proceeding.
During that 1 year, I don't know.
During the 1 year, that's before this act is in operation.
Yeah.
So this act will affect it.
Well, what if it's 9 months after the wages become due, bankruptcy's filed, by the time the bankruptcy proceedings are actually, before the funds are dispersed or the judge decides who's going to get these funds, the year is up.
Seems
and
to me
is,
that
I think the trustee would have an obligation
to comply with this law.
Comply with this, but I don't know what we can do about federal bankruptcy law.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, again, that's a good question for Epstein, although
you might mark that word down.
It's not worse off at all. It might be a lot better.
It might revert back to Section 220, where we now have property held by that agent fiduciary, which gives them a 5-year holding period.
It would probably
change the nature of the property.
It would probably ease the responsibility of the trustee, because the claim would be there that there would definitely be someone to pay it to, so the trustee wouldn't have to hold it for it.
Or if it's his wage claim last month.
Okay, we'll check into that. I can't see how the person could be any worse off.
I don't see where this puts it in any different position than the actual wage.
Let's go on to...
I don't know, maybe it's...
Since we're all such bankruptcy experts here.
Divorce.
I tell you, besides corrections, bankruptcy is a growing field in this state.
It's a growth industry.
That's true.
Okay, 260.
Section 260 deals with safe deposit boxes, 5-year abandonment period.
Okay, Mr. Phillips,
what's the law now?
The law now? 7-year holding period. We have to instead of having the property turned over to the state via the custodian, we have to issue a judgment against the bank, and the property then becomes the property of the state.
Okay, let me get this right in my mind. Let's say the person does not, he dies, and obviously no one knows about his safety deposit box, and their rental's not paid. That means the bank has to hold on to it for 5 years before they turn it over to the state.
There is a provision in the statute that I could flip to immediately where a holder of unclaimed property who recognizes that they're not going to be able to find the owner because maybe they recognize the owner has died can petition the state or request the state to take the property sooner than when the holding period for abandonment expires.
But suppose no one else around that this fellow who died, family knows about the safety deposit box. You know, one reason or another, he didn't tell his family or next of kin, oh, by the way, I have a safety deposit box.
That seems to be the purpose of the whole bill, Randy, because the bank's going to hang on to the property after 5 years.
Yeah,
to take
the
safety box out and turn it over to the state, and then the state's responsibility is to find out who it belongs
to. Okay, the point I'm getting at is I think 5 years is too long for the next of kin to know about the contents in that. Box. I mean, if the bank's going to hold it for 5 years, the guy dies and, you know, no one notifies the bank that he dies. They have to hang on to it for 5 years before they turn it over to the state.
Well, they don't have to hang on to it. In other words, the bank, if you don't pay your box rental,
right,
is going to vacate that box. I don't know what they do with the money. I suppose.
I think they give you something like a 6-month grace period or something like that. You see what I'm getting at? You know, how would the heirs, if there's any, know about what the contents in that box, they have to wait 5 years before they find out. And even then, it might be too late.
Well, no, they would notify me as soon as nobody's paid the rent.
Mm-hmm.
Then the bank is supposed to, I mean, they'll try to find out what happened, where the person is they're supposed to be paying the rent. If there are any heirs that they have notice of, or, you know, they'll attempt to find the person.
Mr.
Chairman, I think maybe this is a question we ought to ask Mr. Elstar.
And I have another question about that. What is the term other safekeeping repository? What kind of thing is that refer to?
Don't they have, I know there's a project going in Anchorage where they're going to put some private vaults in. You could put some gold bullion in and stuff like that.
That's a possibility. Also, the
mini
storage unit.
Yeah. It's reality.
They did that?
Yeah. We had it about 4 or 5 years ago now.
Actually, sometimes there's some very valuable stuff in these boxes. Other times, in the little movie that they showed us.
Junk?
They opened it up. The state opened it up under compliance with the law. And there was all there was, and there was a note that says, "Dear Charlie, I told you I'd get to the box before you."
Yeah, that was amazing.
Okay, let's go on to...
I think...
Where is it? Yeah, yeah, well, I've noticed it right here.
You know what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I'm just curious about these mini storage things. Is there a separate provision for those, or are they covered under this 260?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just, in the Unclaimed Property Uniform Act, in the comments, it says here that this section, and it's identical to the language we have here, this section is intended to cover property left in places other than, is not intended to cover property left in places other than safekeeping repositories, for example, airport lockers or field warehouses. Its coverage is limited to safety deposit boxes in banks and other financial institutions.
Okay.
Why would it not say that? It doesn't really say that.
Most states have statutory provisions apart from the unclaimed property law for the disposition of property abandoned in such places as airport lockers.
Yeah, we have that warehouse municipality thing that we're dealing with elsewhere.
What about the Minnesota?
That's what I'm talking about. That'd be a warehouse, apparently.
Well, it seems to me that we ought to examine the relationship of those two, of this warehouse and this lane and this thing, because, for instance, if somebody's got a, one of these mini storage places and they take off or whatever, you probably want to allow that, the owner of that business to sell that property, but you probably also want to have him hold on to the proceeds. In para materia, that's for you, Randy, this act.
Okay.
Anyway, I think that's what someone should check out.
What we have earlier in the bill is the provision, right now under state law, in 34.45, they have to sell the property, under Title 34.45, right now the warehousemen have to sell the property and turn it over to the court. And back here in the beginning of the bill, we have the provision that, here it's Section 6 of the bill, but the court holds it, it was 6 months and now it's going to be 1 year after the date of sale. And remember, we talked about that also in subcommittee. But I don't think that this language is clear, because other safekeeping repository doesn't, on its face, you have to look at the commentary, and people
okay.
won't.
Yeah. So honestly, in a banking institution or something.
Is it proper to make a to move for an amendment at this point?
Why don't we just notice that?
Okay, because I would like to say other safekeeping repository in a financial institution.
One year sale in a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
It is. They do reference it here. Yeah. So I think they're in tandem.
Okay. Let's keep going, Steve. We're now at Article 4.
Article 4 spells out how the reporting process works for those who hold unclaimed property. I made available to the committee, I think last Saturday, a schedule of who does what when in the reporting process, who makes the mailing notice to the owner, when does the bank or financial institution make the notice, when does the state make a written notice, when does the state advertise, when is the property turned over. We can go through that in detail, but that handy little chart I passed out takes care of it. This Article 4, Section 280 discusses the information that the report must include. When the holder turns over property to us, they've got to at least give us certain information. Name, last known address if they know it. They only have to give name and address if the amount of property is $25 or more. Anything under $25, they just write us out a check in full for it, and we're done with it at that point. No advertising necessary. In the case of insurance companies, not only do they give us the owner's name and address, but also the beneficiary, so we can try and find the beneficiary as another option to us. You can also describe the property for us, in case we don't want that white elephant, you know, that is abandoned, especially in the case of safe deposit boxes. They'll give us a full list of what's in them, and we can then respond back to them. They give us the valuable stuff, you keep the junk.
What about including another one that says any other information the reporter may have which might be helpful to locate the for instance, a guy may work for me, he lives in an apartment building down the street, his name's Joe Dokes. I give that, but I also know that he's from the Tuscaloosa. address down there, but he worked for me, and I knew him somewhere. I knew that he's from, you know, that's where he's from.
Yeah.
And I had a good chance it's probably where he went.
Okay.
Well, do I expect the holders, you know, to make some sort of effort to find those folks first? If they have that kind of information.
No, I mean, I owe the guy $200 in wages. I'm not going to make, you know, I'm not going to hassle it. I'm not equipped to track him down and touch the loose.
Well, I think, could we say any other pertinent information? I'm not sure where it'll go, but...
Section 6 of this part says that we can ask for other information the department prescribes by regulation. That gives us the ability through regs to require maybe a little more pertinent information along the line you're asking for.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, one thing that bothers me about these long uniform acts, and it used to be a problem in the UCC, I think it's a problem here. And that is the numbering of the sections. The section here that we're dealing with, the report of abandoned property, is section 17. And since we have this thing numbered section 280, when they redid the UCC a number of years ago, about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, they numbered it so that the section numbers are the same as the Uniform Act. I would like, when we come out with a final bill here, to have them renumber the thing so people in all states, you know, so our thing will be number 17 or whatever, or 170 or something, so it's real clear which section goes where.
Then that changes the whole preceding, all the preceding parts of the uniform, of the unclaimed property. All you have to do is look in the footnotes. They just put in the, I mean, they can't be that lazy, because it comes with your statutes, you know.
But it doesn't say in the note.
Well, we should just tell the reviser to do that.
What they can do is number whatever chapter it is, the unclaimed property chapter, and have section 110, 120, 130, and there's a bunch of sections.
The uniform chapters, I mean, the Uniform Act might use numbers that we've already used up in other titles or anything else.
We just renumber the, have the chapter number.
We can end up revising the entire body of law.
I'll explain what I'm talking about. They did it. They started out on that theory with the UCC, and there was so much confusion they renumbered it. And now it's the same in Alaska as it is in every other state, and it makes it a lot easier because this stuff will be used interstate a lot.
I think one comment might be pertinent. That is that other states that I am aware of, that I have, you know, looked at their laws and compared ours and saw how they fit together. There's just a jumble of different ways they number. They have not tied their numbering system to the Uniform Act numbering system. It's up to you as to whether you want to go through that arduous task.
Well, maybe through footnotes we could do something like that.
Well, that would be okay if they did it. It makes it a lot easier for people to use this thing to have it equivalent. You know, then they don't have to go back to the Uniform Code.
See, where were we?
We're at section C. I must admit, I'm using the old draft just because I've got a lot of notes alongside. So if you're having trouble following me, I'll let
you know.
Where the current holder knows that there was a previous holder of the property, he also needs to notify us of the previous holder's name and address. That might be someone that we can go to find a better address for the owner, getting back closer to the source of the original transaction. Section D and E give the due dates of the report. Note that there are two separate due dates.
I don't understand. I have to ask you to back up on C. I don't understand what that is. Could you give me an example?
I'm afraid you're going to ask me for a good example. I'll just have to say that where the owner of some property allows a holder to hang on to it for him, whether it's a bailee or whatever, and that bailee, let's say, dissolves his business and turns all of his assets over to the new owner of the business, that new owner needs to notify us of who the previous owner was, or previous holder, excuse me, of the property. That previous holder may be able to give us a better lead on the owner. Any questions on the due dates of the report? Again, the insurance companies file on a separate timetable from everybody else, which allows us to spread the volume of work out over the entire year. It also requires that 120 days before the filing of the report, the holder is to notify by mail all of the owners of property. So would require the credit unions, the banks, insurance companies to attempt to make contact, establish contact with their customers before they notify us.
So it's not more than 120 days. So sometime during the preceding 120 day period, they do this.
$290 gives the department a little bit of, we call it, gives us teeth to enforce the act. It allows us to go to someone who has not filed a report and require them to either file a report or to respond to us verifying that a report's unnecessary. Section B gives us our audit authority. Especially in the case of a holder who we have reason to believe is holding property but fails to turn over a report, allows us then access to records to conduct our audit.
This is the old number, right?
Section 290B.
Well, there's a proposed amendment, Mr. Chairman, on page 18, line 6, I believe. Is that what it goes?
Right on 10, I think.
I have it.
Oh.
Anybody else have it?
No. Nope.
Yeah. Stole the son's zinger.
No. It's just to keep people from rambling too far through the...
I have no problem with that.
Through the power audit.
So the reference would be page 18, line 10.
We're not making amendments at this time, but we'll mark it up.
Highlight it there. Line 10, did you say? Yeah. Okay. Okay, let's see.
Well, does anybody else have any trouble with the breadth of the power that's given to the department here? Just say at reasonable times, upon a reasonable notice. They just say, hey, Joe Blow, next week at 9 o'clock we're coming in, we're going to look at all your records. And they have no, you know, shouldn't we put something in there at least that says that they have to have some grounds or basis for believing that the person is holding property and not reporting it? I mean, this is carte blanche. They can just go just about anywhere as long as they give them a week's notice and say they're coming during business hours.
If I may respond, Mr. Chairman, for the most part, we expect broad and very good compliance with the Act. However, we do feel that we need the ability to go in and test the compliance, much as we do with in tax law, you know, to do random audits to determine whether or not the taxpayer has, in fact, reported all the property to us. We need that general authority to be able to do that. Certainly, in our current tax administration, we work closely with taxpayers. We allow them to set the schedule for us, you know, at the point it would be most convenient for them to have us in. There's no reason that we wouldn't be doing that with this as well. I think using the term reasonable times means that we're not going to come in the middle of the night. Doesn't mean that we're going to come in unannounced. if we were to do that, it wouldn't take long for you folks to get wind of it, then really put the kibosh on it, so.
You know, it's fine, you know, they can't trust us. I'm sure we can trust this gentleman here, no question about that, but his successor in the job is the one I'm worried about. And I'm going to note that as a possible amendment.
Sure.
At least put, have some basis for it, other than just, you know, they decide that, you know, whoever it is, they're just going to go through their books.
Is this language consistent with the tax?
It's not identical, but it's consistent. In fact, we have probably even broader powers under tax administration than this.
Well, we don't want to create another IRS here.
That's right.
We got one. We can, no.
Okay, well, you can promote it.
Section D is another section you might want to note then. If the holder fails to keep the records that are required by this section, the Department of Revenue may prepare a report for them based on best available information, based upon whatever estimate we can make from the available records. This again is very similar to how we administer taxes. The taxpayer either destroys, loses, or does not keep records. We have the authority to file a return on their behalf. Even if you looked at the fiscal note, you would see we're not requesting a large contingent of auditors to begin scouring the countryside. In fact, we're not requesting any at this point. But it does give us the authority in the event we need it. Section 300 was something that came up Saturday and I didn't get an opportunity to discuss it. But I think Gary Jenkins mentioned that he was concerned, or maybe it was someone from the audience, concerned about this 10-year retention of records schedule. And if you add 10 years on top of the 7-year holding period of 15 years for checks. You know, we've got a long time that you've got to maintain those records, but we've discovered that the federal banking law requires them to hold signature cards, which have the name and address, either in microfilm or the cards themselves forever and a day. So we would like to point out, and I talked to Mr. Epstein about this, that we have, again, regulatory authority under Section A here to work things out with the various industries. It may not be reasonable to expect the small mom-and-pop grocery stores to have a retention schedule the same as the national bank. And this 10 years is a guideline. We can be flexible there.
How could we word that thing? Because under this law, you wouldn't have any flexibility under this law.
Well, no, the last sentence says unless a shorter time period.
Oh, yes, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're
so
right.
There is a lot of flexibility there. And one of the first things we will do on passage of this act is conduct public seminars, meet with each industry on an individual basis and determine how we want to write regulations to deal with them.
Yeah,
I'd like to go back on something that bothered me a little bit, and this is this privacy issue that's up above in Section 290 sub B. One of the problems I have run into as a family law practitioner with respect to APOC is a requirement that I divulge the names of my clients, and these are clients who are in marital situations, and so in other words, I'm particularly sensitive to that. With respect to this inspecting by the department, I could see a situation where they would go into a lawyer's office and ask to examine his books and trust funds and everything else on clients, many of whom have real rights of privacy.
And whether or not they rise to a constitutional level, I don't know. But as a practical matter, I think that there should be something at least considered that would deal with situations where we have, at the very least, another regulatory agency involved, like the Bar Association. And I'm not sure how to handle it, but my gut feeling is that lawyers would have a problem with the Department of Revenue going in and examining their clients' records when the clients have an expectation of privacy.
Well, that's a good question. Epson was asking about that.
You might want to reference that. We're just talking about the privilege, attorney-client privilege.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe we should reference that in here just to make certain that these privileges are going to be recognized.
Mm-hmm. Not recognized under the tax code.
I'm saying we only need one act.
Well, that doesn't mean that we should do it here. I mean, a lot of things in the tax code people do. I don't know.
Well, why don't we ask Epstein? I don't see where it really rises to any privilege, how much money you have in the trust fund.
The fact that, okay, I'll tell you how it could arise. You have a husband who comes in and wants you to represent him, and there's no divorce filed. And then, you know, you're on retainer, but you're just giving advice, or a wife, the same thing. And that's very definitely an expectation of privacy.
Well, this isn't getting published anywhere.
Well, it's getting out to somebody. I mean, that's the real situation.
Why don't you tie this into a Class C felony like we did in the last one?
Class C misdemeanor.
Well, we're saying here the department may not disclose.
Don't get to that one.
The department may not disclose information that is viewed or obtained during the course of the examination, unless the disclosure is necessary to carry out the purpose of the chapter. So, admittedly, somebody always, in a given number of thousands of cases, somebody's going to disclose her wife or spouse when he gets home. But aside from that breach of the thing, this it seems to me this.
Well, there may be a way to do it where you can reveal the information without the name of the client.
We just noted this issue.
We need to keep moving on. Okay, we're on page 19.
Section 310.
Yeah.
This provides the responsibility for the department to publish a notice in newspapers of general circulation in the area where the property was abandoned. It requires the notice to be made once each week for two consecutive weeks, provides a date by which the notice must be made.
Now, is this similar to the Texas example?
It's exactly like the Texas example. We would probably, in our notice, reference the cities of Anchorage, Ketchikan, Juneau, Fairbanks, maybe some of the other smaller but more populated towns, and try and break them out if we have good zip codes, that type of thing. We'd also be providing lists to you so that you could get a hold of your constituents, assist us in helping find them. I doubt that it would be that easy to do it by district, mm-hmm. Certainly by zip code.
Do it district in my area.
Well, I got a little portion in it.
Yeah.
It's a little difficult.
Sure.
99504 is
on the record the first admission ever that Eagle River was part of me.
He said Anchorage is part of his.
Yeah, Anchorage is part of Eagle River.
Okay.
Section C of that part states that we do not have to notice unless there's $50 in value at stake. Advertising is very expensive, and this is one way of saving on the cost. Seems to be the standard in the industry.
I don't really quarrel with that, except all we're talking about is one line. It seems to me something like $50. Well, I don't know.
Yeah,
there might be a whole bunch of them. Yeah, I guess you're right. Okay. Yeah. Okay, let's
this is Alaska, we'll call it 50.
Extra dollar a
piece. May I inquire? Is there much, if we were to, no.
Section D, mail out to the last known address of all of the owners of property, the abandoned property owners. This will be made based upon not the information given to us by the banks or the financial institutions or whoever turned the property or has notified us, but it will be made based on addresses that we're able to obtain from our own records.
Yeah.
So it'll be a much more successful finding.
The very latest address.
That's right.
What kind of mail does that mean? 35 registered in
plain old mail. Plain old mail.
Of course,
we can do it.
Are you going to wait until March 1st to do that, or on a normal business, will you do it as soon as you get hold of an address, you'll call them right away or write to them right away, right? But you just have to do it by March 1st, is that
right? Yeah, we have to do it no later than that date.
But if you got the information, you try earlier, right?
Absolutely. In fact, what we will be doing is, you'll note that in our fiscal note, we have part-time clerical support. Those folks, we may have them stationed in Anchorage just to save on telephone costs, but those folks will be actually phoning people as we get, you know, a positive ID from our own records so we know where the person is. We're just going to call them and say, go over to your bank, tell your banker that you're still alive and well, and reactivate your account before they turn it over to them. So
on that Texas thing, Hayden found about four residents.
Really?
Yeah, good relatives.
I call them up and they ask for a finder's fee.
You better get it done before the act passes, because there's a provision in here that says that any finder fee type contract within 2 years
of the property. This is the Texas.
Oh, okay.
It's too late.
Well, see, what we're going to do is call Texas and tell them to turn it over to us. So you'll have to come deal with that.
You really need phone up and count them?
On this mailing the notices, I'm trying to figure out what the value of unclaimed property would be. Guess what I'm saying? I think I'd feel a little bit more comfortable, and I'll see what kind of response you're going to have. Certified or registered mail, but it's not every time you send something out and no one's there, you always get it back. How would you know for sure whether that address has indeed been abandoned or discontinued? Because sometimes it just doesn't come back.
Even in the instance where it reaches the owner and the owner doesn't open their mail, I think someone here was mentioning that last Saturday. You know, you just from the Department of Revenue, we'll get rid of that one right now. We probably want to audit me.
But he signs off on it, and he still gets rid of it.
Well,
he still got a receipt to show that he's in possession of it.
Yeah. It's just that I think it's cost prohibitive. I think it's real cost prohibitive.
Okay, well, that's why I'm asking.
And we don't care if it comes back to us. I mean, we're not even going to use the information on those that come back to us and say, okay, we've got to dig deeper for further information. We, under the statute, looked as far as we can. We've exhausted our resources. If it comes back to us through general mail, that's as far as we're going to.
Items for $50 or less, you know, do regular mail, which is just unlimited value. I was trying to look for a value. There's no
value.
You're
trying to say if it's over $500, you have to do certified mail?
Yeah. I mean, something that's worth the less.
Do you have to send a letter to anybody regardless of the value?
$50 or
$50 or more.
That just says publish and notice. Mm. It doesn't say mail.
Yeah, I think it does.
Keep going down
the page. D, section D.
Yeah,
the partner shall mail a notice.
Later on. The
value
is $50. Okay. We've
got 3 minutes left there.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I just need some
information. Make an OW.
Got it.
Okay, after all of this has taken place, after we've returned probably 50% or more of the property to folks that do come out, that respond to our advertising and to the mailed notice. At that point, and it's provided the date, it's got to be 6 months after they filed the report. At that point, then we recontact the financial institutions, all the holders, and say, okay, here are the folks that didn't respond, turn the property over to us. We take the money from them. So the property doesn't come to the state up front. We try and leave it with the banks. We try and get the people just to go ahead and re-notify the banks that they exist, that they intend to keep their account. So section 320 talks about then the delivery of the property and how it's to be handled.
I just want to make sure I understand this right. You're leaving the money in the bank, for instance, up until 320 period is in. But during the mailing period and the publication period, the money is still in the bank.
That's right.
Okay, that's it. Or what about the gift certificate? The gift certificate is still in the store.
The gift certificate, with, if there's no name address, is turned over to us with the filing of the report. So with that, with traveler's checks, with things that do not identify a particular name address, it's turned over immediately with the report. So, and we do not advertise where we don't have a name and address either. So they're not going to get a mailed notification or see their name.
Okay,
well,
I have one more minute. Is there a
Page 21,
I've got 7 pages. Yeah, I think. Okay, I think this is a good stopping place. We'll see everybody on this bill again, 10 o'clock Thursday morning. Is there any reason for which they can maybe 9:30? 9 would be okay.
Wow, well, we could even do it earlier. We in the minority aren't have a coffee yet.
What about Thursday? What about starting at 8?
Fine with me, if they're checking my calendar right now.
I've got to double check mine.
No, 11.
11:15.
Okay, I'll tell you what, I'll get in touch with everybody here.
Okay. I like that thing finished.
Oh, wait a minute, I've got to be in finance. That's right, John can conduct this.
Well, I have resources going on here at 8:30, so.
Okay. Let's say 9:30.
Okay. 9:30.